Breakfast puppies?
This podcast contains adult language and content and is meant for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
We're all set to begin, so let's dive right in to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your cars, but mostly it's about dive bars. Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Okay, Jacob, what are you drinking right now that the rest of us are not?
Oh, well, for those of who have been listening the last couple episodes, we had a white Ukrainian on a previous episode. We did a shot of a Ukrainian vodka, and I am enjoying a drink from back home that was very popular with many of the Ukrainians I grew up with, which is a good quality hard cider, Crispin in this case, with a shot of a good quality vodka in it. So good.
Can I try it? Sure. I'm intrigued.
I mean, it can't be worse than a white Ukrainian.
It smells very nice. I can smell it from here on the other side of the table.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Especially with Ukrainian vodkas or...
Pass that COVID down here, would you? Yeah.
Or more...
That's interesting.
Or more traditional Finnish vodkas where... Yeah. They don't purify it to death, so it's just basically raw grain alcohol for all intents and purposes. Hmm. It just adds a little something. I love Crispin original hard cider. This is just a little bit better.
Okay. I've never had either of these things today, and I'm a fan. That's a pleasant beverage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could drink that on a hot day or a cold day.
It's like all the power of a good hard cider that the vodka just brings forth a couple notes a little bit more forward. Plus, it has a warming effect. I will say that if you're fishing in the fall, when it's cold and dreary and rainy in Minnesota, it just goes down quite perfect.
Speaking of things that go down quite perfectly.
Excuse me.
What a happy couple.
Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Recorded here in Portland, Oregon. I'm NBC.
I'm Jess Jacob. I'm
Dylan.
Dr. Xander Gerrymander.
I'm Poppy Beaujolais.
Poppy, how will you ever survive?
Duct tape, lighter, couple cans of cat food, and a blanket?
I don't know if that was serious advice or kinky, but...
I will leave that to your imagination.
And that will stay there for a while. But yeah, I think after these last two shitty years, we're starting to survive again. That's where I was trying to go with that, Poppy.
At first, we were afraid. We were petrified.
At first, I was afraid.
I was petrified.
So today we are talking about survival games. It's a genre of games that I especially and Xander are kind of addicted to. I mean, I will flat out call it an addiction, but I don't know how far the good doctor would go.
Not an addiction for me, but I definitely enjoy a good one.
I've played a number of them. Some of them I found more approachable than others and also more enjoyable. Bobby?
What's a survival game?
Jacob?
So, a survival game, be it a role-playing game, a board game, or a computer game, is a game where you are faced with a set of, where it's you versus the environmental conditions. Whether it's the fact you don't have shelter, a la the forest, whether it's you're managing scarce resources, such as Klondike, the board game, or any number of RPGs going all the way back to first edition Dungeons & Dragons Wilderness Survival Guide. You know, it's all about how to manage your resources, how to overcome the potential social collapse issues, if that's part of the game, to just figuring out how to make do when you have basically nothing.
Okay, so different from when you're trying to survive, like a serial killer is trying to kill you or like zombies are trying to kill you. It's not that kind of survival game. It's more specifically against environment and maybe there's insurgents out there or something, mostly it's about early man. How did we survive?
Zombies do play a heavy theme, I would say, in the vast majority of survival video games out there.
I was going to argue the same thing.
They're not the best ones, but there are largely the vast majority of them have just like a tedious mechanic plus zombies.
Right.
Yeah. Mm.
Though there are exceptions such as Green Hell, The Forest, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of them that are not involving zombies or whatever.
Ooh, what's a tedium mechanic?
Where every X minutes you need to go into your inventory and click on a thing to keep playing.
Ah,
so
okay.
That's essentially that is what a lot of survival games make, food and water. So in a video game, you have to, if it's a survival game, my experience with the ones at least, you need to collect food. You need to collect water. You need resources. You need to build a campsite to cook your food kind of thing. And by tedium mechanic, what I'm saying is a large part of the game is that cycle of going into your inventory, clicking on the item, dragging it to the other item, and then eating it or something. Mm. And then you do it every 5-15 minutes or something.
Kind of like the survival mode Fallout New Vegas made you do that.
Yeah, yeah. My first exposure to survival games, I think, or video games at least, was my own personal implementation of survival play in those games, where you didn't have a mechanic that you needed to do it. But I remember when I played Fallout 3, I always made sure that my character had a reasonable amount of equipment. So I didn't carry 17 guns. I always also carried food, because you find all that food everywhere. It's there. It's like, you know, it would make sense if I stopped somewhere, sat down, had a snack, and then got back up and started killing more super mutants.
So what you're talking about too is not even, because that's not how Fallout 3 works. That's how you chose to play the game to make it a better game in your for your playing style.
Yeah.
Which I also really think is fun.
I did it in Skyrim too. I always, because there's so much beer, you find ale everywhere, Nord wine. And so I was like, you know, I found this abandoned shack here in the woods. I got 12 bottles of Nordic wine in my bag. I'm just going to spend the next few hours
getting drunk,
taking off various bits of clothing, and I'll put some music on and whatever. Do some risky business up in here.
That's what you're doing down here when the curtain's closed.
Okay. But those are mechanics that I imposed upon myself. I mean, I think all of those games have had survival modes added to them. But it's fun when you do it yourself of your own accord. You're like, it's your own mental framework of how you're going to approach a game.
Yeah. I actually really did enjoy the survival mode in Fallout New Vegas myself, but I also think the way that you chose to do it is a much better way, because it sounds much more realistic, which, and that's why there's certain games in general that I don't like, because it seems like there's enough realism in there to make the survival aspect interesting, which is where I'm going to start with bringing up one of my favorite survival games. It is of the zombie volition, and that would be State of Decay.
Oh, State of Decay. I have the rule book for that.
Man, that game was wonky. I got it. Was it a Kickstarter? No, it wasn't a Kickstarter, but it was one of those like early access things.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it Xbox? No, I got it on the Xbox 360 back in the day, and I followed.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know it was that. Okay.
Yeah, when that game came out, I was like, I saw where the advertisements were, and I was like, yes, me. I want that. Want that now. And then I got it like the day it came out on the Xbox 360, and I was like, wait, I can't save my game? And the game keeps playing when I'm gone?
Yeah. But the reason I like it, and for those who have not played it, the game starts off, you know, you wake up in a cabin in the woods, and things look a little off, and you find out, oh shit, there's some zombies. The first weapon you get is like, I find stick, hit zombie in head. Like, it starts you off with like, you have nothing. You weren't expecting a zombie apocalypse. You have no fucking guns. You were just here to go hang out in the woods with your friends. so you have no weapons. Fun mechanics to me in a game like this, specifically in the zombie variety, is that if you find a bag to search, you can do, I'm going to ruffle through this bag real fast. You make more noise, zombie hear you. Bag.
Yeah.
Or I can go really quietly. It's going to take a while, but then no one's going to hear me. And the same thing with running, because you're in the forest, you crack more branches under your feet, zombie hear you, but you move fast. And so there's all these payoffs that you have to do and go back and forth. As you go and find more and more survivors, you know, you can play any character at any time, which is also kind of cool too. So you're not stuck with just like the one dude, but you're also given a bunch of skill sets that these characters have. And like 90% of them are fucking useless. Because again, it's not like a movie where like, oh, I see the grizzled, you know, Marine vet, and then like the surgeon survived, and then like, you know, like the farmer, we're good here, guys. We can make him. No, it's like you got like the fucking influencer. So one of their skills is like literally selfies, and you're like, great, you're fucking useless, which is how most of the characters would be, which is why I thought it was really interesting. And there's a lot of resource depletion in it as well. You can set up a base, build some defenses and whatnot. And then, oh shit, I've raided all the cabins around me. Now I have to start all over again because there's nothing else left. Or I can get into a car and drive around, but cars are loud. They attack more zombies. So it's like, it's all these like push and pull mechanics that I thought was really interesting in the game. That's why I liked it.
So what you're saying is that the NPCs that you acquire, bring in the survivors and build your compound out are essentially Hammer Crawl characters.
Oh yeah.
I was gonna say, isn't one of the skills in Hammer Crawl
selfies?
Yeah. I think I played that character once and I used my selfie stick for something
in combat
or something. Yeah.
So that's one of my favorites, and there's a couple other ones I'm going to talk about later. But Jacob,
I am currently running a role-playing game, Red Markets, which is, of course, because it is such a trope, zombie apocalypse. And with Red Markets, if you're playing it as designed, the creator, Caleb Stokes, literally describes you should treat the zombies like the weather.
It's just here. It's always changing.
It's just here. Sometimes thunderstorms happen because climate change is a big factor on that. And the other part of it is that zombies are just like a thunderstorm passing through. You know, you run into zombies, it's just like the weather. There's a super simplified mechanic for dealing with it that doesn't make them any less dangerous, but they're just treated as that. And it's the getting by. And the core setting for Red Markets is it's 5 years after the collapse. So a lot of that, you just run around and pick up the canned goods stuff and siphon the gas tanks, is out the window. All of that basic scavenger stuff is no longer anywhere near as effective, because at that point, canned food's going off, gas is. Even if it's in a tank with stabilizer, it's at best at the end of its lifespan.
Yeah.
You know, and how do you build communities when infrastructure collapse is widespread? Beyond that, I play the video game 7 Days to Die religiously. I'm a huge fan of it.
But you also play a shitload of
Ark Survival Evolved, which
you
is also
your partner I see constantly online with that game running.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Which is not the traditional. They're basically, survival games run into three general categories with a whole bunch of nuance to them. There's some sort of post-apocalyptic survival, whether it's nuclear war. There's a whole bunch of great video games that came out in the 90s and early aughts about that. The zombie apocalypse, super common. There's actually a couple that are environmental apocalypse. Those are also interesting.
There's a, we're going with survival games. There's disaster ones.
Yep.
Disaster Report. Yep. And that whole series that happened on the PS2 that were actually okay. They were essentially non-zombie versions of Resident Evil kind of stuff that had a, one thing that was very interesting was that you had a three-dimensional backpack instead of like the inventory grid. Because, you know, inventory in most games is either just a list of things that you have, or in some of the Resident Evils, it's like you have this grid and each item takes up an amount of space. Or Diablo does that too. In this, it took that to the next dimension and you had a three-dimensional bag. And in that bag, you put like a water bottle took up this space and a lighter took up this space. It was pretty cool.
That's actually pretty awesome sounding because most inventory systems in most games, they're just ridiculous. I mean, slightly off topic, but I watched Free Guy for the first time the other night.
I've seen that movie now five times.
and the way they do the inventory mechanics is randomly pulling, like, just guns going into a digital backpack instantly disappearing. Just like, oh, it just cracked me the fuck up. But that's why I like what you're talking about, is, like, you actually can only do so much.
And that's the world apocalypse concept, which is one of the big three categories. The second one is personal apocalypse. That's your plane goes down in the middle of the Amazon jungle.
Yeah.
You are disconnected from the wider world, and you have to make it until rescue or you can get back to civilization.
Oh, so all these game designers read Hatchet as a young boy and basically made Hatchet the video game.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of
just checking. Yeah,
a lot of it. Yeah, I mean, the through lines to survival games come from a lot of places, and that's a whole discussion in itself. and then the third category is the choice of hardship, which is board games like Klondike, board games, other games where you are intentionally going out to a place with limited resources and direct threats to your person, such as going to the Klondike to discover gold, and you are having to make all of these choices and decisions of balancing how much food do I bring? What do I do when this weird accident happens and suddenly my sledge breaks? Or can I actually count on my fishing skills? That sort of thing.
What, if I'm not mistaken, Klondike was basically the Alaskan version of Oregon Trail.
Oh, just about to say.
Exactly.
Oregon Trail may be the first, if not one of the first survival games ever.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Because but is that the game I'm thinking of? The Gold Rush, the Klondike Gold Rush game?
So there is a Klondike video game, which is the one I think you're talking about.
Yes, it is.
There's the Klondike board game, which is also about Klondike, but it's individual, not party, but it has the same sort of mechanics.
Robbie?
So I have played a survival game.
You played Oregon Trail.
I played Oregon Trail in the day. Of course I did.
Oregon Trail is the quintessential basic survival game, and every game that has come since of the genre has the same core mechanics.
Yep.
Your food weighs X amount. You can only carry certain things.
Mm-hmm.
You need certain supplies as insurance against potential danger in the future, such as wagon wheels and such.
Yep.
Yep. And if you go hunting and you kill 18 bears, unfortunately, you can only take a fourth of one bear back with you.
Right.
And you just wasted a bunch of your fucking bullets.
You just wasted a bunch of bullets.
And in so many ways, Ark Survival Evolved is the, especially if you play it along the optional story that you can choose to ignore in the game, it is very much Oregon Trail with raptors jumping out of bushes trying to kill your ass.
So one of my favorite survival games, and I'm pretty sure that's what you would consider this, I've been playing it a fair amount recently, has been Frostpunk.
Mm. Frostpunk is interesting, and there's a lot of debate as to whether it's a survival game.
Isn't it more of a colony sim?
It's more of a colony sim, but
it's a good way to put it.
Yeah,
there's elements there, I think.
There's
that would
elements
maybe
there.
Nudge it into that category. Yeah. Because the whole reason basically the overall setting is it's like steampunky Victorian England. The sun is basically dying out and you have to move up north counterintuitively to build these reactor things to keep your people warm. But the temperature keeps going down and you're kind of the last vestiges of survival of the human race. So you are fighting against the elements. Mostly you are doing a lot of resource managing. You're also still building things. sending out exploratory groups to try to get more resources in there. And like, basically the weather is against you 95% of the time.
My question is, what role in that game do you as the player have?
Oh, you're just a little puppet master.
Then that's the colony.
That's the colony.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And one of the hallmarks of the survival genre is it is inherently
individually based
or
small
you
party.
You and a group of fellow players who are actual players and have agency.
Or taking that a step further and providing you also the additional optional role of an overseer of whatever. But still, you can always fall back to being, I'm going to run out and club the dinosaur with my butt of my rifle, or I'm going to go back to the colony. I'm going to make sure that these five guys are fortifying the walls, and then I'm going to send Roger out to club the dinosaur because he's got dinosaur clubbing at skill level 5, and I've only got it at 2.
I see that you're auditioning to join my tribe in Ark Survival Evolved, sir.
Well, I do apparently own it thanks to not spending a single dime yet every week getting a free game on Epic.
And honestly, the core of what you're talking about there, and part of the reason, so NPC and I have had this conversation, it's come up in podcasts before, and it's about the appeal of competence porn.
Yeah.
And survival games are, when you get through it, when you're doing well, it is competence porn of the first order. Every choice you make has a cost. You know, good survival games have decay mechanics in the items you use. Your armor isn't always going to stay perfect. It's going to wear out. You know, the choice to go out and actively hunt usually means you're burning water and food, but you're gaining meat and hide, you know, that sort of thing. So it's balancing those trade-offs, balancing opportunity cost. And when everything's going your way, it feels so good. That competence porn is there.
So you just lit a fire in my brain that reminded me of the age-old argument, both on primarily on video games, but sometimes for tabletop as well, of what makes an RPG an RPG. And it's a huge argument. Like that topic, what defines an RPG is the root of an infinite number of flame wars, many of which are still going to this day from the 90s. But to me, at least in a video game sense, what I consider an RPG is one where it's less about player skill at the moment and more about player skill beforehand. There you play a character and you level yourself in a certain way that the behind the scenes math works for you better. It gives your character, like, you're not firing the bow, but you've got this combination of abilities that you've built up that makes it so that when your character fires the bow, they get a better chance to hit kind of stuff. Fallout 3, I believe, was actually a pretty good RPG in that even though it gave you the illusion of being a first-person shooter, it really wasn't. Because not just VATS, but so much of your ability to hit someone, you could be point blank with a gun pointing at someone. And if you had zero skill, there was a non-zero chance that you would miss because it was based on random number generation. Uh-huh. And to me, that the RNG is a core part of the game and, you know, mitigating and pushing that RNG so it leans more in your favor. That is what I define as mechanically an RPG. A lot of survival games have that, I've noticed. Like they are, like you were saying, it's about competence porn. And part of that competence is being smart enough to know how to invest, I only need 4 pounds of meat and I only need 2 water bottles. And I know that it's going to get me there because I'm now light on my feet. That's giving me the light on my feet perk. And it's going to get me this. And I'm going to kind of stuff like
exactly.
that. And even though you are out there, like, you know, first person running through and clubbing dinosaurs, you can, I don't know Ark that well, but for most survival games that I've played, there's that element of investing in your venture to give yourself bonus points on the random number generation that's working in your favor.
Honestly, you're hitting it, especially with both Ark and 7 Days to Die. You know, you can load up with every kit and tool you want in either of those games and go out. You're going to burn more food and water just walking from point A to point B in the first place. You're going to be slower on your feet. You're going to not have space to pick up the stuff you find. So it's that trade-off mechanic. And there are generally two types of survival games, whether it's board game, video game, or RPG. There's ones where, less so in RPG, but there are ones where the gains are mechanical skills that go into the random number generator that unlock new abilities, et cetera, et cetera. Then there are some really, really good ones that aren't usually made anymore that are all about what's going on in the player's head, not the avatar on the computer screen, where it's learning new things and remembering new things. That, like, games that don't, you don't learn recipes for things mechanically and then you can do it. There's a game that was called Survivor that you could do anything in that game when you started if you figured it out, but you had to figure it out. You could figure out how to purify water, but no one was going to hold your hand unless you were lucky and tripped across a note from somebody who had figured it out before.
Poppy, you play a survival game.
I mean, kind of.
Darkest Dungeon is a dungeon survival game.
Okay.
I mean, there's still that sim element to it, but, you know, knowing when to light the torch so that they can see, knowing when to eat the food. You have to plan the adventure.
Knowing when to make them suffer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Darkest Dungeon would be like a survival light game. You still have this logistic support of the town that you can retreat to, and it has an infrastructure that you're not responsible for that can add support to it. But, you know, when you're in the dungeon, in Darkest Dungeon, you are making opportunity cost decisions. Mm-hmm. Do I use a torch or do I use one of my character's ability to create light? Do I, you know, burn this shovel to get this barrier out of my way? Or do I do this one with hands because we're pretty healthy right now and I might need that shovel later? You know, it's, you know, any good game has an element. Well, let me take that back. Many good games have an element of resource management to them. But the farther you get into survival games, whether they're crafting survival games or non-crafting survival games, you end up making more and more decisions that where there is a clear cost to whatever choice you make.
So it sounds like one of the draws to a survival game comes down to an element of control. Then there's more decisions to be made, more choices you can make to affect an outcome of a game. Whereas a lot of games seem to be just like, well, you've got to find all the puzzle pieces and then you just solve the puzzle. Whereas this is more personal choice driven.
I would make a small tweak to that. You're almost there as far as I'm concerned, but not quite. You start in a situation where you have no control. You almost always are at the whim of the elements, the other factions in the game, whatever, and you develop control. You, through your journey, whether it's in a single-person game or I PvP all the time, player versus player, all the time in survival games, where one set of it is me getting control, enough control over the environment where I'm pretty sure I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning not having starved to death in my sleep. And then when you add other players in there, you add this whole social mechanic of, like, are we good with the folks down the road, or are they going to raid us in the middle of the night and steal everything we own?
That brings us to multiplayer survival games. There is a genre very popular these days, the multiplayer online open world survival game. I kind of sort of hate all of them because of the players. It is a game that it's one of those that you have to buy in to play it the way the developers intended. Like, you know, you can easily sit down and play Fallout 4. You can sit down and play Fallout 4, and it's pretty obvious the way the developers intended, but you can also play it however you want, and that's your experience. Mm-hmm. With a multiplayer online open world survival game, all elements of immersion are ruined by teabagging assholes who just do nothing but grief and go around and fuck or do whatever because they don't give a fuck. They're just going to respawn if you kill them, kind of stuff. That element of humanity, which is strongest in gamers because they tend to be dicks about that kind of thing and they do it for the lulz. That's why I hate those games unless I'm in an extremely closed, specifically put together private group experience.
I, too, have played Fallout 76, which is what I thought of immediately when you said that. And I thought, beautiful scenario. The game itself is very pretty. I'm going to take the bugs out completely when it first came out. And just, you know, the base of it made no sense. Because if you're all from the same fucking vault, then why is every other dickhole trying to blow your fucking head off because they mass leveled above you? It doesn't make any sense. So that, like, that aspect alone made no sense in the game, which is why I think in survival games, for the most part, having really well-made NPCs make a lot more sense because you don't have the random element of, you know, I'm a 13-year-old incel living in my mom's basement that wants to go and kill everybody.
I get that, but I have a very quick counterpoint before we wrap up. And this is not to convince anybody to agree with me because it is a personal preference thing. I play both 7 Days to Die and Ark on both private servers with small groups of friends and public servers that are PvP. And let me tell you, the high you get when you and a bunch of tribe mates plus a couple allied tribes lock down a server and go, we're decent people. New players that come to the server have protection. We'll give them a helping hand to start. And if some off-server raider dickbag comes in, we're going to show them exactly what sort of welcome they are going to get. Is just amazing. Being the sheriff protecting the small town in the Wild West with you and a bunch of friends is just amazing. Like, shout out to my buddies, Anger Issues, and a whole and Battle Rack, and Wayo, and Ada, where, you know, going into a server and locking that sucker down so assholes don't have a home is an amazing feeling.
Okay.
That okay. Can be rewarding. I've done good. That in MMOs. It just, when a game it tries to tailor a certain experience for you that is easily ruined by people who have nothing to lose but time. That is a failure of game design, unfortunately.
Yeah. If the game is entirely designed so folks like that can just walk all over anybody. Yeah. But yeah, no, that is survival games. That's why I love them. It's obviously why Xander loves them. Everybody's got a little bit of love for them because we all have fond memories of Oregon Trail if you were born post the Apple Revolution.
Yeah, I would just go in there and just like turn in a circle and just shoot whatever. Yeah, I was.
The 8-bit one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was 10.
Oh, yeah.
You know, maybe?
I think 8 is a generous number of bits.
Yeah. I don't know. It was Apple IIe to Apple IIc kind of era, you know? Maybe. Like, I don't know. So, yeah, just turn in a circle and kill whatever you want, and then Timmy gets dysentery and, you know, whatever, it's fine.
Oh, dysentery. Oh, swamp fever.
Drowning. Trying to ford the Kansas River or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to realize that the Dalles was not Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what a dumb name for a town.
I never made it that far, jeez. I always died way before that.
You did not survive the survival game?
Oh, goodness, no. No.
I think I only got there like a couple times of the dozens and dozens that I played.
I really want to play it now as an adult and see if I can get to the Dells.
I used to go and name the players I wanted to die in my party after the classmates I hated the most.
Yeah.
I think everybody did that at one point or another.
No,
hey, Steve, you died, you idiot.
I always gave them names like, you know, shithead and twat face and whatnot. Because I was a middle school, no, I was elementary school when I played that game.
Yeah, as an elementary school.
So I was always giving the dirty words, you know.
Did anybody ever not choose the doctor?
Well, the first time I played, I was like, oh, I think the farmer has the better chance of survival because they're going to know more about, you know, farming and making something off the land. Nope, 100% about money.
Yep.
So basically the doctor is easy mode.
Yep. The doctor is easy mode. I played farmer all the time just because I thought the same thing. And it's the one thing I still to this day hold against Oregon Trail because it's a missed opportunity. Obviously, they were working with a very small code base they could implement. So, you know, that's all of that. But, you know, making those choices like Project Zomboid is huge, where the type of survivor you choose to start with can be someone who's totally useless, but can in weird ways add to the party. Versus if you take the hardcore survivalist, everything's on easy mode, but boy, do you depress the rest of the party just being there.
Oh, great. It's that guy.
I really want to play Oregon Trail like tonight. We got to figure out how to make
it. Well, there's a zombie version of it called Oregon Trail.
Oh, my God.
I think the Internet Archive has an emulator.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So. And it's a game that has been updated with every new computer system. They put it out there because elementary schools be hitting that shit every single time they can.
I
want
to play the version I played in, you know, fifth grade.
I think I actually played up to like Oregon Trail 3 or 4. It actually came out with some like decent graphics at some point and made it a little bit more actually survivally because your class did actually count as to your ability to survive out there.
Yeah, I just remember that green, blue, and white.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, green, blue, and white. So you played the second version, not the black and white original.
I played the Apple version.
So there were two Apple versions. We'll talk about that some other time.
Yeah,
because I feel that we need to do a callback to the video games of our childhood and how Apple shaped our generations.
Kind of have to remember them.
Anyway, until next time, you're listening to Biker's Dice and Bars. I'm NPC.
I'm Just Jacob.
I'm the Dr. Xander Gerrymander from the Oregon Trail.
And I am Poppy Beaujolais. I have died of dysentery.
And Jacob?
I always keep it shiny shied up and know where your sidearm is.
Yeah.
Always tip your bartender and never look straight up at a bird.
You know, crits are good, but so is an investment in a shitload of +5% to your dice rolls.
Please always drink responsibly and don't try to get across the Kansas River. You're going to die.
I believe it was the Columbia River that you had to ford, wasn't it? Fording the Dalles?
You had to ford so many rivers in that game.
So many rivers.
Whatever. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for joining us, friend. We've reached the end of Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and